Her of Samson Raphael Hirsch lived in the 19th century in Germany and spent his life fighting the reform movement, which was prevalent during his time. One of his fundamental teachings was that Judaism, Yiddishkeit, is unlike any other religion. In most religious practices, it is the people trying to figure out how to relate to my God, to the God that I have created, or the God that I believed in, using our human mind to try and develop a relationship. In Yiddishkeit, in Judaism, religious practice is dictated by Hashem, and our role is to obey exactly what we are told to do. We see this clearly in his commentary to the very tragic and difficult to understand story of the death of Nadav and Avihu, which is related in this parsha. To give it a little bit of background, the Mishkan is finally standing, and the entire Jewish nation is waiting for the Shechina, the divine presence, to come down and occupy the sanctuary. The 7 days of consecrating the Mishkan have finally passed. It is the eighth day, Yom HaShmini, and Hashem calls to Aaron and says, "Bring your korban, bring your offering." Aaron does so, and the Shechina appears before the Jewish people. A fire comes down and consumes the korbanos, and the pasuk says, "Vayar kol ha'am," and the entire nation saw, "Vayarenu," they called out, "Vayiplu al pneihem," and they fell on their faces. As you recall, as we've been doing this journey over the last few parshios of Chumash Shemos, this has been something that the entire Jewish nation has been building towards, has been working towards, has been donating towards. The Mishkan is finally up. And then the unthinkable happens. On the happiest day since Matan Torah, since the giving of the Torah, the two sons, the elder sons of Aaron HaKohen, both tremendous righteous people, both tremendous tzaddikim in their own right, do something. And it's quite unclear what it is that they actually did. The commentators spend a lot of time trying to figure out what their actual sin was. But we do know that it involves some sort of offering that they brought to Hashem, which he rejects. The punishment is instant death, and the day of celebration turns to a day of mourning. What was it that they did? According to Rashi, either they brought a korban, or they did something that Moshe had not commanded them to do, or, again, according to Rashi, perhaps they had been drinking wine as part of the celebration of the building of the standing of the final eighth day of the Hakamas HaMishkan, the bringing to completion the work of the Mishkan, and they brought the Ketores when they were a little bit drunk. The Ketores is a special incense offering that was brought once a day and also on Yom Kippur. And again, all the Mefarshim, all the commentators are trying to understand what exactly their chet was. Rav Hirsch points out that often we find a rejected karban adjacent to an accepted one. For example, Cain's karban was rejected and Hevel's was not rejected, it was accepted. When Shlomo HaMelech is going to build the Beis HaMikdash many, many years from now, Hashem will warn him multiple times about how to bring a karban, and that the only value of the karban, the only value of this offering, wrongly translated as sacrifice, a karban means to bring close, to be makriv something means to bring close this offering, and the only value of that is doing it exactly as prescribed. In the pasuk in our parsha, we say, "Vayikru." We read, "Vayikru b'nei Aaron, the sons of Aaron, Nadav Avihu brought, ish machtasai, each man brought his own, it's a type of shovel, that was the tool, vayitnu b'han ish, and they put on them, on it a fire, vayasimu aleha ketores, and they put this offering, this ketores, vayakrivu lifnei Hashem ish zara, asher loy tziva isam. And they brought before Hashem a foreign fire that he did not command them to do. Rav Hirsch goes into the words of the pasuk. First of all, vayikru b'nei Aaron Nadav Avihu. At this point in Chumash, we've already been introduced to Nadav and Avihu. We don't need to say that they are the sons of Aaron. but perhaps it's emphasized, you're the sons of Aaron, you are nephews of Moshe Rabbeinu, you have people to ask, why are you bringing this carbon without asking whether this is something that's a good idea to do or perhaps not a good idea to do? Ask your uncle, ask your father before engaging in this act. Ish machtasai, each man took his own shovel. They took their own spoon. They didn't even ask each other. They put too much value on their own importance, their own position, their own knowledge, and were self-sufficient and satisfied to do things the way they felt was the right way to do things. And again, certainly, it must be that their intentions were good in bringing this extra sacrifice. They were trying to get closer to Hashem. After their death, they are called Kravai. They're called, these are people who are close to me. In the comforting of Aaron, Moshe is going to say, Hashem told me that he's going to make a Kiddush Hashem. He's going to create an example out of the people who are closest to him. And Moshe is going to say to Aaron, I thought that he was talking about me or you, and clearly Nadav and Avihu are even greater than us because Hashem chose them to make the example. That means Nadav and Avihu weren't chas v'shalom, they were not bad people at all. They were tremendous, tremendous tzaddikim. And yet they did something wrong. The role of a kohen, of a priest, is not to act independently. In Rav Hirsch's words, a kohen is entirely at one with and part and parcel of the nation, and is in no way separated from it, and only within the nation has his office any meaning before God. Again, as distinct from other religions, the Kohanim, who are our representatives in the service of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, are not coming to create their own system to serve Hashem. They're representatives of us, and their only value and their only meaning is to serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu in exactly the way that they are prescribed. The Kohen would take the machteh, the vessel from the Mishkan, from the Tzibor, and he would use the Eish, the communal fire that was always burning. Here, Nadav and Avihu took their own machteis, and they took an Eish Zara, a foreign fire, to bring the Keteres. Now, the Keteres is something that was brought always as a Karban Tzibor, as an offering that came from the entire community, not as a personal offering. It can't be a personal offering. And it came once a day at a prescribed time and on Yom Kippur. And here they're clearly separating themselves and bringing an independent offering based on their own misguided intentions. Even a karbon nedava, that means like we spoke about last week, a person has a personal feeling that he wants to come closer to Hashem, and so he's going to bring his own karbon. It also comes with a prescribed procedure, and not by the whims and wills of the one who is bringing it. There's a procedure for everything. Again, to quote Rav Hirsch, Kirvas Elokim, the proximity of and getting near to God, which is the purpose of every offering, is only to be found by the way of obedience, by compliance with God's will and subordination to it. This is the difference between Judaism and other religions. A pagan brings a sacrifice to attempt to make the God subservient to his own wishes. I need God to bring the rain. I need my God to make me win this war. I need God to help with fertility, whatever it is that we need God for. So the pagan would figure out, what is it that I could do to make God do what I want him to do? The Jew wants to place himself in the service of HaKadosh Baruch Hu by showing himself to be subservient to him. It's not that Hashem is working for me. It's I'm working for him. A self-devised offering is the exact opposite of what we are meant to be doing. During the time of Rav Hirsch, the people felt that they should be devising new ways to serve God, to adapt the Torah to the changes of the time. Rav Hirsch made it clear, the Torah is not adaptable, and it's not people who decide the laws. The way we relate to HaKadosh Baruch Hu is by following his commandments and following them to the letter. Rav Hirsch makes another interesting and timely point. As I quoted before, after their death, Moshe will comment to Aaron and say, "This is what Hashem said to me. He told me, Hu asher diber Hashem. This is what Hashem said, Lamar, Bikravai ekadesh. I will make myself, I will sanctify myself with those who are close to me." What's interesting is that we don't find any record of HaKadosh Baruch Hu actually saying this to Moshe. That means that Moshe is quoting something that Hashem said to him, but it's the first we're hearing of it in the narrative of what happened. Rav Hirsch uses this pasuk to prove that not all of what Hashem said to Moshe is found in the Torah Shebichsav, in the written Torah. There is much, much, much more that Hashem said to Moshe, which is only recorded in Torah Shebaal Peh, in the oral Torah. And again, Rav Hirsch, in his time, is fighting the appearance of the Bible critics who are pulling apart the Torah as a historical document and showing the inconsistencies based on the thoughts that were prevalent at that time in the 19th century or started to become prevalent. And what Rav Hirsch is trying to say is that the Torah is not meant as a historical document. There are many, many things that HaKadosh Baruch Hu said to Moshe Rabbeinu, and here's a proof, that we don't have recorded in the written Torah, and the only way to understand the Torah Shebichsav, the written Torah, is by relying on the much greater amount of information that we have in the oral Torah, in the Torah Shebaal Peh. These are two fundamental lessons which Rav Hirsch points out from two psukim in this week's parsha, so relevant back then at the time that Rav Hirsch lived, and continue to be so relevant today.